Welcome into another episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast. I'm Kelsey Conway here with Charlie Goldsmith as we get ready for the Bengals to take on the Rams in the Super Bowl. After beating the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game, the Bengals doing the unthinkable and knocking off the three-time reigning AFC champion Kansas City Chiefs. Charlie, can you believe it? At this point, the Bengals are headed to the Super Bowl after a season in which I think started with everyone just saying maybe they'll win 7 or 8 games.
This is the part of the conversation where Joe Burrow has readjusted expectations, reset a franchise, revamped a city even. I think the celebration and the connection to the Bengals right now is the greatest we've seen in Cincinnati since at least the wire-to-wire Reds. But you can make the case going even farther back as one of the most well-liked Bengals teams of all time, as a group that's dynamic and confident enough to make everyone forget about decades of a franchise where there was always a fumble or an injury or a devastating moment in the worst possible moment. I don't think people believe in that anymore, and that's because of the leadership from the top.
Yeah, and when you think of a quarterback, can he change a franchise and turn it around? When you just look at from top to bottom what this team has done, but specifically to Burrow, I mean, at this point last year, he was a couple weeks out from his surgery. He was starting his rehab plan, wondering if he'll even make it back in time to start week 1. Well, not only did he did that, you could make a case Joe Burrow could be the league's MVP this year. Obviously, it's probably not going to go to him, but with the way he's played in the last 2 months, it's just been incredible. And I agree with you. Being in the airport yesterday in Kansas City, seeing the amount of Bengals fans that traveled for the Chiefs game, overheard so many of them talking about trying to book flights to LA. The Bengals fans are so excited, and rightfully so. It's just been awesome to see the way the city has rallied around this team. And I agree with you. They are such a likable team, and I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that this was kind of an unexpected surprise from the Bengals. But let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs game in specifically. Obviously, in the first half, it looked like it was going to be the Chiefs show and the Bengals season was going to end at Arrowhead. And if it had, you would have said that was a great season for the Bengals. They did more than we ever thought they could. But as we've learned, this team is a second half team. And right before halftime, when Eli Apple made that tackle and the Chiefs weren't able to get any points out of a drive, which really would have put the game out of reach, the script flipped for the Bengals, and Lou Anarumo made a ton of defensive changes, and Joe Burrow never lost confidence. He did a lot with his legs. It wasn't the best passing statistical performance he's had all season long. He threw 23 for 38, 250 yards, 2 touchdowns, and 1 interception. To compare that, Mahomes threw 26 to 39, 275, 3 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Joe Mixon had a quiet 88 yards, which I thought in the second half, he was a big time. And then T. Higgins, it wasn't the Jamar Chase game. It was the T. Higgins game. 6 catches for 103 yards. Before we talk about the defensive changes, let's stay on the offense. Charlie, what did you see the biggest difference in terms of how the Bengals were able to have success on offense in the second half against the Chiefs?
Yeah, the biggest difference that I'll always remember when I think of how Joe Burrow played to how Patrick Mahomes played in this game came down to Burrow knowing he needed to run the ball. On Saturday night, he told Zach that, here's how I think they're going to play me. And because of that, I think I'm going to see an opportunity to run. What does he do on Sunday? He has those 2 crucial third-down runs, plus 2 other plays, both throws to Jamar Chase, where Burrow could have ran, but then found Chase for an opportunity for an extended play down the field. Burrow anticipated and read the counter move to the counter move that hadn't even happened yet. The instincts that it took to think you know what you need to do and to be right and to do it and execute it on the highest level. Burrow outplayed Mahomes, and that's the reason why. He saw the adjustment that was coming, and he was planning for it on Saturday night. And that was what got the Bengals their biggest first downs of the game.
Yeah, and speaking of Burrow, he as he's always done, I think his temperament and the way he's able to lead, and when you went back and watched the game, the camera flipped to his face on the bench all the time. And the entire game, he just was cool, calm, and collected. And you can just tell it allows this team to think that regardless of being down three scores, they have a chance in any game. And like you said, he outplayed Mahomes when it mattered. And the best thing about Burrow is outside of that one interception he had, he didn't make a critical mistake when the team needed it, taking a third down sack like he did against Tennessee. He was able to make plays with his feet. And that, I think, was the most impressive thing because of what I said, the fact that he's making these plays with his legs coming off of a year in which he basically blew out his entire knee. He looks like he truly feels like he can't be stopped right now, and it's injecting life into this Bengals team. On defense, the Bengals defense did what they always did. They bowed up when it mattered. The Chiefs were getting after them pretty early on. Jerick McKinnon was having a lot of success. Tyreek Hill also was getting loose. And as Lou Anarumo said before the game, we cannot let them score touchdowns. They have to score field goals. Well, in the second half, which is the second time the Bengals have done this season, they limited the Chiefs to just 3 points in the second half. And when they needed it most, when pretty much everybody probably assumed when the Chiefs got the coin toss and started with the ball on offense in overtime, even Josh Allen tweeted pain that the Chiefs were going to do this again. They were going to steal another victory in overtime because they won the coin toss. While Von Bell and Jesse Bates said, nope, not going to happen. And I thought it was so fitting that those two players made the biggest play of the season because those two guys are two of the Bengals' captains and two players who started the DB film study that they did on their off day. And those two guys have been all about getting this team to this moment, and they made the play when it mattered most. I know you wrote a story about what you saw from Lou Anarumo and the changes he made. What did you think was the most impressive thing that the Bengals did defensively in the second half?
Yeah, you know, we've talked a lot about how they rushed three and they dropped back eight, but there are two more specific nuances to that that I think they deserve more credit for. First is, I didn't recognize this until I was able to watch it a couple more times, how they used their safeties. It was like cover one with a robber safety shallow over the middle, except they used the extra guy as an extra robber safety. So at like the 15-yard range instead of the 20-25-yard range. It was like cover one with cover two in front of it, and specifically those extra defensive backs were clamping down on Travis Kelce and Tyreek Hill. That was huge. That flipped the game and forced Mahomes to make bad decisions. And then the next biggest thing, too, was how the Bengals used their spy, mostly Logan Wilson. It was funny. He would usually like engage with the block for a second and then back off to that spy responsibility. So even though he wasn't rushing, he still took up a pass rusher. And that's why the Bengals were able to rush even better in the second half than they did in the first half. They were rushing one fewer guy, but Hubbard and Hendrickson had better angles and windows because the Bengals had a spy who took up a block and sometimes came through with a delayed blitz. And those two tiny nuances are the difference between how maybe, you know, it's happened before, teams dropping eight against the Chiefs, how those teams did it and how the Bengals did it to make it the worst statistical second half of Patrick Mahomes' career.
Yeah, and from a stat perspective, Sam Hubbard led the way with sacks. I thought that was Sam Hubbard's best game he played all season. I thought he was absolutely outstanding. And B.J. Hill with a monster game. Give a shout-out to B.J. Hill on this podcast because his journey has been nothing but easy, and he shows up in Cincinnati before the season after being traded from the Giants with a role player expected here in Cincinnati. And not only did he come down with an interception, he had half of a sack, filling in obviously with more time because Larry Ogunjobi is on injured reserve. And then Trey Hendrickson, who's been the Bengals' best defensive player, really got going in the second half, finished with 1.5 sacks, a total team effort by them in the second half to limit the Chiefs. And when you look at the game, and we'll get into more of the Rams breakdown next week, but you got to feel good about Cincinnati's defense for a number of reasons, but watching what they did to the Chiefs in the second half, in my opinion, the Chiefs are a better offense than the Rams. Obviously, the Rams are a very good offense, and Stafford is hot right now. But the Chiefs' dynamic playmakers scare me more than the Rams. So watching what the Bengals' defense did to the Chiefs in the second half has got to give you a lot of hope in terms of your thoughts on how the Bengals could maybe beat the Rams because of their defense.
That's the belief and that's the hope. The Bengals specifically built their defense with teams like the Chiefs and teams like the Rams in mind. Specifically built the defense, built to try to contain these hybrid West Coast wide zone offenses, the Shanahan offenses, the McVay offenses, the Reed offense, which has incorporated a lot of those principles. Just look across the board. Strong edge rushers containing the pocket. Power up the middle in DJ Reader. Building the linebacker room around a player in Logan Wilson who started his college career as a safety, had 10 interceptions, and whose strength is in coverage. Prioritizing depth at cornerback, not spending for William Jackson, and instead using that money to get multiple guys. Mm-hmm. And then investing in safeties, specifically safeties who are versatile, who can play multiple roles, whether it's, you know, that cover one up top, cover two together, one of those robbers I was saying. How many blitzes have Jesse Bates and Von Bell changed the season with? I can think of one for each of them in the playoffs in particular. The safeties can do it all. It's a versatile defense that can adjust on the fly. And again, those types of players they targeted were added with this style of offense in mind.
Yep. And as we said, we'll get into more of the breakdown of what exactly the Rams are going to try to do. But there's also the angle of Zach Taylor knows exactly what Sean McVay is going to do. Obviously, Sean McVay has evolved a little bit since Zach Taylor left. But Zach Taylor knows that offense inside and out. And obviously, the Bengals will have to go out and execute. But I think this is a good matchup for the Bengals when you look at a couple of those things. Obviously, the only thing that I don't like about this matchup is Aaron Donald and the Rams pressure. Their defensive front is the best in the NFL, and they had 50 sacks during the regular season, which is just ridiculous. But the Cincinnati's defense has been so opportunistic during the postseason, and Jesse Bates is playing the best he's played all season long, and the team is riding what he's giving them. And if this defense continues to be opportunistic in that Super Bowl game, Stafford has shown this season he can turn it over. So, you know, you go into this game, obviously the Bengals won't be favored. And more, I'm sure on all of the pregame shows, it'll be a heavy dose of people picking the Rams. But when you look at what the Bengals have done recently, kind of hard to pick against them when you see what Joe Burrow has done and the way the Bengals defense has been playing of late. Charlie, what are some of your other opening thoughts on the matchup with the Bengals and the Rams as we kind of wrap this thing up and get ready to head to LA where we'll do more of this stuff?
Yeah, I'm just curious what the role of the run game is for each team's game plan. The Rams have kind of opened it up in that area once Cam Akers returned. The Bengals' run game was patient in the first half, specifically on first downs where it was being very inefficient. But then that did pay off with, I think, a 23-yard run by Mixon in the third quarter, followed by on that final game winning field goal drive. A few key power runs up the middle and to the left side as well, where the Bengals were able to close the game that way. It's funny. Like, we've talked all season about the Bengals' weaknesses being pass protection, specifically strong defensive linemen up the middle, talking about how much the red zone offense has struggled in the playoffs. They've settled for too many field goals, talking about being way too patient with the run game when the run game was inefficient on early downs. The Bengals have been all of those things the entire playoffs, and they're in the Super Bowl. So, you know, we'll talk about their weaknesses, but they have shown the ability to overcome them throughout the playoffs.
Yep. And as we said, there's going to be a ton more to talk about. There's a lot of good storylines in this matchup. I referenced the Zach Taylor, Sean McVay storyline, but of course, Andrew Whitworth being drafted and playing so many of his years in Cincinnati, now with the Rams. Cooper Kupp was Zach Taylor was his coach back when Taylor was in L.A. And obviously, as you mentioned, the emergence of the Rams run game with Cam Akers basically tearing his Achilles in training camp and making it back. So there's a lot of good stuff for us to break down. And Charlie and I, as always, will be here to do that for you. We'll have wall-to-wall coverage of everything you want to know about the Bengals matchup with the Rams from LA next week. But before we head out, I'm going to bring in Jason Hoffman to give his thoughts on what took place this week and to talk a little bit of what's at stake from a betting standpoint as the Super Bowl is nearing us. Let me tell you about the new sports app we've launched as part of our USA Today family. USA Today Sports Plus is the new sports app that puts the fans first. Get the latest scores, stats, and standings, and enjoy interactive experiences with our award-winning sports writers. Download USA Today Sports Plus from the Apple or Google Play stores today. USA Today Sports Plus, fan harder. Well, here is Jason Hoffman ready to break down what took place in Kansas City and what happened with the NFC Championship game and how we made out. So, Jason, what do you got for me today?
We're on a run. Not just the Bengals. We're on a run. the narratives seem to be all put to bed, basically, around both Matthew Stafford and the Bengals here. I told everyone I liked the 7 points. I wasn't going to commit to them winning outright.
Right.
As soon as you got into that 3 point and then the possibility of – and then it going to overtime, you knew the Bengals were going to cover.
Yeah.
And I did not pull the trigger on the tweet because I was going to wait for people to lose their ever-loving minds on me, and I decided not to troll people like that. But I really thought about saying, hey, we're in overtime. Only can win by 6. That means right. The Bengals cover. But yeah, that you want to talk about. I'm sure you and Charlie did a great job on that. But you want to talk about a crazy game, momentum shifts, all that. It was nuts. And then so they win that. And then everyone can watch the NFC Championship with a scouting. Except for you all, yes.
I'm going to go back and watch that game to get ready for the Super Bowl.
Correct. I'll be honest with all the stuff we were doing on the back end here. I only caught the fourth quarter of that game, and then seeing the Jimmy G meltdown.
But like, who wasn't expecting that, right?
Yeah, but it was epic in the way that it unfolded, right? It wasn't just like one bad pass here and then that's the game. It was like, here's another chance. Oh, you're going to screw up again. Here's another chance. Oh, the offense is going to stall again. Like, it was incredible. So I was personally hoping for the Bengals 49ers Super Bowl, but
as I think a lot of people were.
Yeah. But Rams 49ers ended up being as good of a game as billed.
Mm-hmm.
The streak did not make it to 7, which that would have been unbelievable if Sean McVay had lost 7 games in a row against the Rams. So betting wise, the Bengals are not only on a winning streak in the postseason, they're on a winning streak on the board too. So they finished the season. If you'd have ridden the Bengals this year, just taking them against the spread in every single game, their record was identical to their regular season record, 10-7.
Right.
So they're now 13-7 against the spread in 20 games this year.
Crazy.
After covering against the Raiders, then winning outright against both the Rams and the Chiefs. So it's a momentum thing, right?
Right.
Couple things that I like in this game. I like the fact that it's already moved a point. So I've been giving
4.5, right?
Correct. It went from 3.5 to 4.5 in 24 hours. And if people have been listening, I brought up the sweet spot that we've been in where 80% plus of the money, I think at kickoff, it was like 83% for the Titans game and 85% for the Chiefs game was on both of those home teams.
Right.
So the fact that the line's already moved.
Do you think that the people in Vegas have factored in at all when you look at this number? Are you shocked at the number? Or because in my opinion, right, the Rams are the clear favorite simply because the star power, they're playing in LA. They are what you could say a better team than the Bengals, talent-wise. But like, honestly, I'm kind of shocked it's not – like a lower number, because at this point, how do you pick against Joe Burrow? Like every time that he's not, the Bengals aren't favored, they win.
So you get it. There's a few things at play here, and we'll remind all of our listeners how this works. So the spread is not necessarily indicative of the actual matchup, right?
Mm-hmm.
The spread is whatever the books think they can put out to get as close to even money on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
So take, for instance, now the books have loved the Bengals.
Right.
Because the last 2 weeks, more than 80% of the money's been on the other team, and the books win when the Bengals win. We're approaching another situation like that now. Now, I thought, honestly, handicapping, when I took both matchups into consideration last week before the Bengals even played,
right.
I thought if the Chiefs were in it, they were going to be a 2 to 4 point favorite regardless of who they were playing. And I thought if the Bengals were in it, they were going to be against the 49ers 3 and against the Rams 5 to 7 uh-huh. to open.
Right.
So that right there does speak a little bit to your theory of who bets against Joe Burrow, because that spread was a couple points lower than I thought it would open at.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll get to 5, 5.5, 6, 6.5 before this game kicks off. Cause like right now, LA has 45% of the bets. So the majority of bets are actually on the Bengals. But they're getting 70% of the money. And then the sharp plays right now, which are, I think, holding this line down a little lower, are coming in on the Bengals right now. So the overall betting public needs to come in a little heavier on the Rams before the line's going to move up again. But yeah, I think speaking to the don't bet against Joe Burrow, I think is why that line was a little bit lower than what I thought it initially would be. I think that 5, 5.5 to 7 points seems to be the Bengals' sweet spot when they're underdogs. But yeah, I was surprised that it opened as low as it did.
Right now, you can. I'll give you a week to change your mind because I'll get your final thoughts next week. What do you think? What are you thinking about?
So
this
I'm gonna tease a little bit here. So this will. I'm on a 5-year winning streak.
Okay.
Every year for the Super Bowl, I make a 2-team parlay bet, which means both of them have to hit spread and over under.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved the under lately. Loved it last year when I got the Buccaneers minus the points and the under. I've liked dogs as far as, you know, give me anything more than a field goal in a Super Bowl and I'll ride with that. The Eagles being one of my favorites on that.
Yeah.
Like I said, initially I thought it was going to be a 5-6 point spread.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't like the 4. I'd love to get it to that nice full 7, 7.5 points. But I really like the Bengals plus points right now. How do you say bet against Joe Burrow? I mean, the kid just, and it's not just him, like it's the players around him when.
But don't you just feel like the shoe at some point is going to fall with this offensive line? And like,
it already has.
But like,
he tied a record for getting sacked in the postseason.
Right. But at some point, my point with this being like, he overcame it in Tennessee because Ryan Tannehill stunk up like Nissan Stadium and the defense made plays when they needed to. But I mean, Jeffrey Simmons is a beast. Aaron Donald is on another planet. And you add in Von Miller, who's playing really well right now, Leonard Floyd. Like, I just think. You, at some point, this offensive line, like, I just think at some point, they're not going to be able to overcome the play of their offensive line. And it seems like that is going to be what could take place at SoFi Stadium.
Very well could.
That's just my thoughts right now.
I worry more about, less about the offensive line breaking down and more about Sean McVay and Zach Taylor being the living embodiment of the Spider-Man meme, pointing at himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I worry more about is the game plan.
Yeah.
I listened to – who was it? I want to say it was – was it Mo Egger, Tony Pike? It was either them or a national person. Either way, pre-game talking, you know, getting ready. No, it was Dan Horde and Dave Lapham on their Wednesday show last week. And Dave Lapham brought up a very salient point about Kansas City having Clark and a couple of other good players, but telling everyone to remember, Tennessee had 4 of those dudes.
Mm-hmm.
So yes, Aaron Donald's on a different planet, but he's only one person. Tennessee had 4 guys who are better in between him and better than Von Miller. So they've already seen the worst of what could possibly transpire.
Right, but I think this is – so I've watched a number of the Rams games in the postseason, and like, for example, the Bucks. The Bucks use Gronk so much in the block to block to help block Aaron Donald and those guys. So you're gonna basically double team Aaron Donald every single time. That's pretty much a given. Where is that extra blocking piece for the Bengals that can help when it's you're spending all your energy on Donald and then here comes Von Miller or here comes Leonard Floyd on the opposite side? Like, I feel like, and I'll be so interested to see what Brian Callahan and Zach Taylor and Frank Pollock come up with in terms of, we saw a little bit of Deontay Smith in the game against the Chiefs. He came in and made some plays there. If they don't have CJ Uzama, can Drew Sample hold up in a blocking role? I'm so curious to see, because strength on strength, they're not matching up well against the Rams.
Not the defensive front, no. But yeah. I honestly think the key for the Bengals lies in the Rams secondary and the Bengals wide receivers.
Yeah. T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd.
Scheme, because, you know, so one of my favorite sports in the world is NASCAR. Mm-hmm. So in NASCAR, there's two types of grip you can have in your car.
Yeah.
You can have mechanical grip, mm-hmm. the suspension, the tires, all that stuff, how it works together with the track. You can have aerodynamic grip, how the car gets pushed down on the track.
Yeah.
Well, there's two ways to deal with someone like Aaron Donald. You can try to beat him one-on-one, or you can scheme, mm-hmm. or that defensive front. So if they scheme to go to like a quicker option type thing, how quickly can the Bengals wide receivers or weapons get open? And then two, you know, the offensive line is not good. I would venture to say that you're being generous calling them middle of the pack, because they definitely aren't, but they're one of the last two teams left. However, when Aaron Donald has struggled and that defensive front for the Rams has struggled, it's been with teams that can run up the middle and can get straight after him. Now, we've seen they ran straight into the camp or the Chiefs defensive front, and Joe Mixon got stifled a lot in that game. But I would argue
about the first down runs.
I would argue in the run game, though, the Chiefs are better than the Rams are. So I think Joe Mixon is going to be a pretty decent key to this game as well. I just think, like, again, we haven't broken everything down. We'll do that next week. I also would worry about what kind of Matthew Stafford you're going to get, right?
He's playing well in the postseason, though.
For halves. Has not put together a full game yet. Mm-hmm. You could almost sort of say the same thing with the Bengals offense. Yeah. But hey, first half last week, you know, not exactly great.
Yeah.
Second half comeback, win the game. But I think this is going to be a pretty good, really good matchup. I just know that, yes, Aaron Donald's on a different planet, but there's schematic things you can do to kind of counter that. So
it's going to be fun. And as always, we'll next week reveal our final predictions. But we just wanted to give you a little preview, recap what took place at Arrowhead Stadium. And as always, Jason is going to close us out on this week's episode of the Bengals Beat Podcast.
One more real quick thing before I do that. 48.5, I think, is a rather brave number for this game, for the over.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say that. Yeah. The way the Bengals defense looked in the second mm-hmm. half last week.
Yeah.
The way the Rams defense has looked all postseason.
Right.
48.5 is a pretty brave number.
Right.
So I'm just going to throw that out there. Maybe as a little tease for next week. But yeah, like to remind everybody, we like to have fun here. We hope you have fun too. All lines are provided by Tipico Sportsbook, which is a partner of our parent company, Gannett Company, Inc. And Gannett does make money off of that partnership. All gambling discussions here is not meant to be taken as professional advice. Like I said, we're just having fun. If you or anybody you know has a problem with gambling, please contact 1-800-GAMBLER, and we will see you next week.